Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And tonight I'm looking at the strategic picture that faced Germany and the Luftwaffe when it came to dealing with what Hitler described as the England problem in the summer of 1940. Two very successful aerial campaigns supporting a ground war or ground wars had happened in Poland in 1939 and in the summer of 1940 against France and obviously the Low Countries, and prior to that in Scandinavia. But these were air wars that was designed, that were specifically designed to support a ground invasion. The possibility emerged in the summer of 1940 that a long air war against Great Britain might be fought. The Luftwaffe considered that it might be possible to eventually bring Great Britain to its knees without a ground invasion. Now, by the time that the Battle of Britain has failed, and Hitler had decided that there would be no invasion of Great Britain, no seaborne invasion, then the emphasis was handed to the Luftwaffe to wage an air war against Britain that would have some kind of effect on civilian morale, would eventually bring civilian morale to breaking point, and they would the British people would rise up and remove Winston Churchill and install someone far more reasonable who'd make a deal with the Third Reich. So tonight what we're going to do is we're going to look at the bombing war by Richard Overy, and he begins by discussing the England problem. The exercise of German air power between September 1939 and June 1940 reflected a pattern, reflected a particular conception of strategic air warfare in which victory was a combined achievement of the air forces and the army. The use of bombing was essentially tactical, even when targets distant from the actual front line were the object of attack. Although some German Air Force commanders thought that this form of force projection signified a new age of independent air warfare and revelled in its novelty and power, there was a great difference between a campaign launched to support a major ground offensive and a campaign in which aircraft were working entirely on their own. The possibility in June 1940 that the German Air Force might be used to strike at Britain opened up for the first time the prospect of a genuinely independent bombing campaign. But it was by no means a certainty. In the summer of 1940, there were no plans for an air campaign against Britain that would last almost a year, though that is eventually what happened. So the German air offensive against Great Britain is a confused affair. The defeat of the British Expeditionary Force in Europe and the evacuation at Dunkirk and the decision by Air Chief Marshal Hugh Dowding to withdraw Britain's fighter squadrons, the RAF fighter squadrons, from France back to southern England in anticipation of a Battle of Britain. Much to Churchill's ire, Churchill wanted the Spitfire and Hurricane squadrons to remain in France on French airfields, and Dowding correctly predicted that the airfields would be very quickly overrun and that valuable air crew would be lost, without which the possibility of a German invasion was much, much greater. The defeat of the British and the evacuation meant that the front line had unexpectedly moved to the Channel. This threw all British strategic calculations and French strategic calculations into total chaos. But in a way, it represents total chaos for Hitler as well. It was assumed that the British Expeditionary Force, if not destroyed on the beaches, the reason why the British Expeditionary Force is able to get away is has nothing at all to do with Hitler's supposed largesse and his supposed magnanimity. He later said that, you know, he was trying to show the English that Germany could be reasonable. There was nothing of the sort involved. The reason why the British Expeditionary Force was able to withdraw is because Goering essentially overpromised and underdelivered. He told Hitler gives the halt order, the famous halt order, to stop the tanks from essentially plowing onto the beaches and wiping out the British Expeditionary Force. Hermann Goering says that he can do the job from the air, and the RAF is surprisingly more effective and stronger than Goering was aware could be possible. And the German Air Force was mainly kept away from the beaches, though obviously the beaches were quite heavily bombed. Hitler then doesn't know quite what to do with Great Britain. Invading Britain has never really been on his one of his plans, or his intention, or really his interest. Instead, you have this island that won't leave the fight sensibly when you know, all indications suggest it should do. Instead, it fights on, and so launching some sort of invasion is the only real choice. Though that Hitler has a kind of, Hitler is half-hearted about it. He is not hugely interested in it, and the military planners, all the way down to the air crews involved in attacking Britain, see it as something as a sideshow. Hitler, in Ian Kershaw's biography of Hitler, he writes quite convincingly that Hitler's view was that once Russia was conquered, then Great Britain would recognise that its position was completely hopeless and would sue for peace. So Hitler, looking eastward, said, you know, the answers lie there. The big strategic goal of the war, the kind of the seizure of Russia's territory and resources, the destruction of this Judeo-Bolshevism, which is the way that Hitler spoke about Soviet communism. And also the removal of the of Britain's last hope. So, Richard Overy writes, the priority for the German bombing force in June 1940 was to recuperate and reorganise after the effort made during the Western campaign. The bomber arm at the start of the invasion of France and the Low Countries had a strength of 1,711 aircraft, with 1,084 available for service. By early July, the regroup bomber force had a strength of 1,437 aircraft, with 993 available for service, so it's smaller. Between the 10th of May, when the campaign started, and the 29th of June, the Air Force had lost 1,241 combat aircraft, 51% of them bombers. One third of the bomber crew strength was lost during the same period, 446 out of 1,325 available. During June and July, new aircraft and replacement crew joined the two air fleets assigned to northern France and the Low Countries. Air Fleet 2, under the newly promoted Field Marshal Albert Kesselring, occupied an area from northern Germany to the harbour on the French Channel coast. Air Fleet 3, under Field Marshal Hugo Speer, another beneficiary of the Kruppa promotions announced by Hitler after the defeat of France, was spread out from southwest Germany across occupied France to the Atlantic coast and the Normandy Peninsula. Most of the aircraft were stationed on bases close to the coastline facing Britain. Flieger Corps 4, which specialised in anti-shipping operations, was moved from Kesselring's command to Sperl's so that it could attack shipping approaching the English coast from the Atlantic. A smaller air fleet, 5, under General Hans Stumpf, was stationed in Norway for attacks against the North Sea shipping and targets in Scotland and the northeast of England. Though difficult flying conditions were to limit its contribution during the long aerial siege that unfolded in the autumn of 1940. And this is, once the Battle of Britain is has proven to have failed and have been postponed indefinitely, what Overy is talking about here, and I think this is a really, really interesting way of putting it, is the idea that Great Britain is under siege from the air. By late June, it was not yet evident what direction German strategy would take now that German hegemony had been established over continental Europe. Hitler and much of the German leadership and public hoped that the war in the West was over and that Britain would now try to seek a way to extricate itself from an unwinnable contest. In late June, Hitler withdrew to his headquarters near Gneibis in the Black Forest, where, according to his Air Force adjutant, Niklaus von Below, he sat in deep contemplation of his enemy. Hitler had already speculated about the prospect of offering Britain a way to end the war, but he was not confident that a Britain led by Churchill would be likely to embrace negotiation. Another alternative was an invasion of southern England, the capture of London, and a dictated settlement. This possibility had already been suggested by the German naval commander-in-chief, Grand Admiral Erich Raeder. In meetings with Hitler on the 21st of May and 20th of June, partly to ensure that the next campaign, if there were one, would give a high profile to the Navy. So you had all these service chiefs that were thinking about particular operations as they pertained to their particular branch of the armed forces and what kudos and recognition and resources there might be thrown their way. Raeder nevertheless repeatedly warned of the high risks involved with the cross-channel assault. His personal preference was for another approach altogether, a concerted strategy of blockade directed at British trade using aircraft, submarines and surface raiders to reduce British imports and stocks to an insupportably low level. This was the strategic choice with strong echoes from the First World War, when the German Navy had promised that unrestricted submarine warfare, launched in 1917, would sink enough tonnage every month to force Britain out of the war. Blockade was also a strategy strongly supported by the Air Force. In November 1939, the Air Staff drew up a detailed target plans for attacks on British shipping, ports and food stocks. The head of German Air Intelligence, Colonel Joseph Beppo Schmidt, in a paper entitled Proposal for the Conduct of Air Warfare Against Britain, argued a powerful case that in this war, it was Britain which was much more vulnerable to blockade. Key is to paralyse British trade, he wrote, to counter-blockade the blockader. Of course, many Germans of, or many of the leading German military elite and the Nazi Party would have had bitter memories about the Royal Naval blockade from 1916 to 18. And in Hitler's mind, one of the great weaknesses of Germany during the First World War was its inability to have a sustained access to resources, and he was pretty convinced, and he wrote so in Mein Kampf, that this is how Germany was defeated, and it's, I guess, a fair assessment. Overy writes, in the end, Hitler opted for all three possibilities and achieved none of them. The air sea blockade of Britain was already in being, based on a still active directive first issued from Hitler's headquarters on the 29th of November 1939, in which he'd ordered extensive aerial mining of British coastal waters and estuaries. In early July, Hitler finally decided to make an offer to Britain at the next session of the German Parliament, scheduled for the 19th of July, and asked his Foreign Secretary Joachim von Ribbentrop to draft a suitable speech. But at the same time, on the 2nd of July, the armed forces were asked to begin exploratory planning for a possible invasion, and 5 days later were given a formal directive to prepare operational plans for war against England.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The same day, July, on the 7th of July, Hitler informed the Italian Foreign Minister, Count Galeazzo Ciano, who was visiting Berlin, that he was inclined to unleash a storm of wrath and steel on the recalcitrant British, but had not finally made up his mind. Ciano found Hitler calm and reserved, very reserved for a German who has won. On the 16th of July, Hitler finally ordered the invasion as a priority. Given the code name Operation Sea Lion, the directive explained that a landing on the southeast coast of England between Ramsgate in Kent and the Isle of Wight would be possible only if the English Air Force could be so morally and physically disabled that it no longer showed any worthwhile capacity to attack the German crossing. No definite date was announced until it was certain that Britain would not agree to talks. In the early evening of the 19th of July, Hitler duly made his offer to Britain in a packed and uncharacteristically sombre session of the German Parliament, which now invaded by the reality of war. So, the extent to which Hitler really took seriously the idea that the British would listen to reason and do what he wanted, it was a foregone conclusion. He knew that the British wouldn't do, and that option had long since gone. How far Hitler believed that a naval operation was likely or possible is a matter for debate. I'm not convinced Hitler really had a lot of faith in the entire concept. Laurel wreaths had been laid in the seats of six deputies killed in action during the land campaigns. In the front rows of the chamber balconies were populated by senior military commanders, smothered in braid, their medals gleaming. Most of the speech was a triumphant review of German conquests. The war itself Hitler blamed on international Jewry. The offer amounted to little more than an appeal to Britain to see sense. It was brusquely rejected in London, as Hitler had suspected it would be. Invasion became by default the next option. Discussions with senior commanders in the days following the offer to Britain showed Hitler just how difficult the operation was going to be. The Navy Commander-in-Chief emphasised the essential role of the Air Force in providing a protective umbrella over the landing grounds and keeping the Royal Navy at bay, but his lack of confidence was shared by Hitler. A strong case was made by Hitler's Chief of Operations, Colonel Alfred Jodl, that Italy should play a full part in the defeat of Britain to make success more likely. By diverting Italian submarines to the Atlantic and Italian aircraft to northwest France to take part in the bombing campaign. Although Hitler approved Jodl's idea in August, the German military chiefs were characteristically unenthusiastic. Eventually, between October 1914 and January 1941, a handful of Italian fighter and bomber squadrons flew a number of desultory raids from Belgian bases, dropping 54 tons of bombs on East Anglian ports. The uncertainty about the invasion is one of the explanations for Hitler's growing concern with the Soviet Union in the summer of 1940. At first, Hitler hoped that Britain would abandon the war to free his hands for the more important clash with the communist enemy, and avoid a war on two fronts. This is Hitler's chief priority, and this is the overriding German strategic nightmare that Bismarck sought to avoid, that he failed to prevent. Certainly, the Kaiser Wilhelm failed to prevent. And the key reason for Germany being defeated in the First World War, it fought a war it couldn't possibly win. Hitler, by 1941, has a war on two fronts and believes that he has, you know, no further option other than to try to ignore and marginalise Britain as much as possible. There was a belief that Hitler developed in his own mind that Britain would just kind of wither away. It would become an increasingly irrelevant power. Perhaps without the intervention of America into the war, that would have happened. Richard Overy has an interesting way of taking perceived notions, often perceived notions about military history, and re-exploring them. He writes, through all the arguments about German strategy during the July 1940, the one consistent thread was that there was the importance of the German Air Force as the key instrument for creating the possibility of British defeat. This reality pampered Air Force pretensions. A later wartime account of the summer of 1940 by the Air Force History Office underlined the novelty of a situation in which the Air Force could now undertake the strategic offensive on its own and be an independent of other services. A paper prepared by the commander of the Flieger Corps 1 in July opened with the defiant assertion that Germany was by definition an air power, whereas Britain was a sea power. Its chief weapon against England is the Air Force, then the Navy, followed by the landing forces and the Army. Extensive intelligence on British targets had been gathered by the Air Force before the outbreak of war in case it should ever be needed. On the 1st of June 1939, the German Air Ministry had published a comprehensive volume on British Air Forces, anti-aircraft defences, war economic targets and flying conditions. Orientation book Great Britain provided exceptionally detailed maps of British air bases, support depots and anti-aircraft defences. The maps of key economic targets included grain silos, oil storage tanks, the aircraft industry, armaments industries, raw material production, iron ore fields, steelworks and aluminium plants. The graph of cloud cover frequency varied from an average of 40 to 50% across the year over Croydon to in the south to between 60 and 85% over Tynemouth in the north. So the Luftwaffe had an immensely detailed amount of knowledge and preparation, but the problem was that the aircraft themselves were not designed for this sort of campaign. The destruction of the squadrons of Stuka dive bombers that were sent to attack RAF airfields was one instance of this kind of lack of the ability to convert a battlefield aircraft to a strike aircraft against airfields, particularly the fact that Messerschmitt's ME-109 fighter escorts had relatively short flying time in British airspace before they had to go back. And then the fact that when the bombing campaign changed, Germany's two-engine Heinkel bombers were generally too small when it came to mass civilian bombing to cause the kinds of devastation that later on Britain's and America's big four-engine bombers would cause over Germany. So it was about trying to quickly retool the German air power for a different kind of campaign, one which they weren't exactly suited for. And the actual intelligence picture and the meteorological intelligence picture was not particularly auspicious as far as the Luftwaffe went. All in all, concluded a report, it appears that the British Isles, particularly in the winter months of frequent storms, fog and dense cloud, present a very difficult meteorological flying conditions, which without doubt belong among the most unpleasant to be found in any of those major countries regarded as civilised. Even before any decisions had been taken at Hitler's headquarters, the Air Force ordered training operations over targets in southern England using small numbers of aircraft, or sometimes only a single plane. Significantly, these flights, writes Richard Overy, known generally by the German term Sturmangriff, or nuisance raids, were undertaken both by day and by night to prepare German bomber pilots for raids of either kind. Some involved mining operations off the English coast. The so-called schooling flights were intended to familiarise crews with target areas and the pattern of enemy anti-aircraft defences. So in this muddled strategic picture where Hitler's goals and his objectives change, where the Luftwaffe doesn't exactly have the correct equipment for the task, it's unsurprising that a long, drawn-out and ultimately fruitless campaign by Germany results in what Britain views as its first great significant victory of the war. Okay, so we'll finish that, and I'll be looking obviously some more at Richard Overy and the bombing war. If you're looking for a truly, truly excellent book, get his new volume on not just the Second World War, but conflict between 1931 and 45, which he calls the Great Imperial War, which I'm all ears for new interpretations and conceptions of World War II, called Blood and Ruins. It's a brilliant book. Also, do check us out on our website, explaininghistory.org. say hi at Patreon. There's some new content going up there pretty soon, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.